powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, well, there are two very different feelings coming out of this loss for the Seahawks against the Steelers, Jake.
Yes.
Got to turn your mic
on. There are. Sorry. act like a pro here. Yes, there are two different feelings in this game. You walk away from it, and the reality of the team being 2-4 at this point, and knowing that you needed this win, you could afford to lose one of the games, but I was hoping that the Steelers were going to be the team that they would, you know, come out in this three-game stretch and put everybody at ease in terms of knowing that you got Jacksonville coming at the end of it. Yeah, I do. So I didn't love seeing that they unfortunately were not able to pull that one out, that they weren't able to win the game at the end, and that they got embarrassed in the first half. I mean, just simply put, 17 points. They weren't able to move the ball. They weren't able to stop, you know, the Steelers' offense effectively. And then the second half, where you feel mixed emotion, is the fact that they came back being down 17-0, everything going wrong, and they stepped up in a big way. The defense, they only give up 6 points. They were lights out in the second half for most of the game. You look at the fact that the offense, they got right out of the jump. They got the ground game going. They were able to control the game. The offensive line played fantastic. And they really were a different team in the second half. And so you love and admire the fight and the grit and the toughness in this team. You admire the leadership that was not going to let them falter and be embarrassed on national TV on Sunday Night Football. But they still came up short. And that's why, you know, you sit here and you have mixed emotions about the game and the way that it ended. You know, but the truth of it is, though, that this is a team that we had massive expectations for.
Right. And that's where I'm going to start, because it's those expectations meeting the feel-good story of a rally that feels fascinating. And I thought that the feelings were on display most perfectly in kind of like three post-game press conferences. And those three things also highlight exactly what I think a lot of fans are feeling right now. So first there was Pete Carroll, who, you know, in his press conference, he was still stern at moments. Look, you got to protect the football. And he knew that the first half was slow, and he was frustrated about it. But overall, I mean, he was clearly proud of his team.
The hard part is we lose. And, you know, I can't help these guys with that one. You know, all the effort, all the plays, all the come through in the heart and all that kind of stuff, you know, okay, but we didn't win. So that's the game. But God dang, I'm proud of these guys. Jeez, I'm so proud to see that happen and see him fight like that and turn the game.
Now, that was the tone from Carroll, right? Just to, it's the same feeling that comes from a rally or a comeback, where you see a team coming back from behind and you just think, man, good for them. They were out of this one. They had an abysmal first half. They had 65 net yards to, I think, 170-ish from the Steelers. Steelers had 13 first downs. Seattle had just three. Seattle was averaging, I think, just over 3 yards per play. Everything was ugly. And in a startling turn, in a game where we thought they would lean into the run, they had just 18 rushing yards on 5 carries in the first half. Coming into the third quarter, deciding to run the ball, as much as some people might not love it, was the right move, especially on that drive. And Jake, I know you'll talk about this, it looking like the Steelers were anticipating they would throw it to try to catch up, and instead they run it down their throats, and it caps off with a 2-yard touchdown drive. So there's a feel-good story. Good for Alex Collins for being the first Seahawks running back since 2019 to get 100 or more rushing yards in a game.
So crazy.
He accounted for 61 of the 75 yards on that drive. And good on rookie Trey Brown for being thrown into a game. He was just activated off the injured reserve, by the way. He hurt his knee in a preseason game, hasn't been playing since then. Thrown into the game to mostly start, thrown into the game to get a huge portion of reps when Sidney Jones was injured. So he was kind of that other narrative I was talking about. There's that feeling of being proud for these guys that Pete Carroll had. You're proud of the team for getting back in it. You're proud of them for fighting when it looked like they were out of it early. The other part of it is maybe some excitement about what could be, right? Trey Brown perfectly emphasizes that point. And Trey Brown, being a rookie, being a very excited rookie, he's asked about his feelings post-game. This is what he said.
Man, I was just like, man, this is just... As you ask me that question, it's tough to answer because I'm trying to keep my emotions. But, man, it was just like, man, it was crazy. I'm sorry because you know my mind is. But it was just, I was looking forward to this for a while. And they gave me, they called my name. And I was like, man, I got to go up there and make plays. You know, seeing Ben Roethlisberger out there, trying not to be starstruck by anything, you know, because he's a Hall of Fame player. And just seeing all these guys and just being out there for the first time. It was a wonderful, like I said, it was a wonderful feeling to be out there, man.
So that's that second feeling. If you're a fan that's looking at this game saying, you know what, it didn't feel good. I don't like that this team is 2-4. I don't like that they didn't get the win. But, man, do you have something with Trey Brown? And like, man, Dee Eskridge is coming back. Could you have something with him? So there's this feeling that there are still young pieces. And, of course, everyone loves to see, Jake, a rookie have a good game and then have that moment post-game where he can't even put into words. You heard him stumbling over words. He's, I cannot find a way, he's saying, to like describe how I feel.
Yeah, because it's great for him as a rookie to get this first action and to have this moment and to be able to perform well and come through with your team. And honestly, when you talk about it from a positive perspective, to maybe look, it looks like you may have found a solution to your cornerback situation. That now moving forward, you have DJ Reed and Trey Brown as the two guys that can hold it down. Now, I still have reservations, and I'm not going to take that one performance and overblow it. I think that we still need to observe and watch this as it unfolds over the next few weeks, and especially the ultimate test when you get Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams down there in Lambeau Field. You'll really have a good feeling in a sense as to where that secondary is and where those two corners are and how Trey Brown holds up against guys like that in an offense like that. But this was a great start. This was a great showing by him. He was physical in the running game. He did a great job in coverage when he was challenged by Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, there's a lot to walk away from and feel really good about. But ultimately, the way that I feel is here in cut number 7, how DK Metcalf answered his question post-game.
Pete, was just when you were talking about, you know, being proud of the fight you guys showed, obviously disappointing the result. Just what do you make of that second half and what you guys battle back?
I mean, we've been fighting for 3-4 weeks now, and we still get the same result. So, no, I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, you know.
Well, that's what I was going to point to with that final feeling that these guys kind of have and the final feeling that a lot of people have. So there's this feeling of, you know, pride from Pete Carroll. Hey, good for these guys, which a head coach is, makes sense. Then there's this feeling of excitement for maybe some young talent, you know, whether you were looking at Daryl Taylor, thank goodness he's okay, who's had a great start to the season, whether it's Trey Brown. Then there's that feeling that to me is much more real, and I know to you is much more real, which is disappointment. This isn't the Jags. This isn't a team, right? The Jags coincidentally started the schedule of games with that early game in London and got their first win of the year. They have a horrible record, but every right to feel excited about where they are. The Seahawks coming up short in a rally doesn't have that same feel-good moment and feeling for a lot of these guys, and DK Metcalf articulates that pretty clearly, not only with what he's saying, but with his tone.
Yeah.
Because this is a team that had Super Bowl aspirations.
Yeah.
And right now they're 2-4.
And that's why I can't take a moral victory here. That's why I'm not sitting here on Monday and talking about, wow, what a great comeback and way to see these guys, you know, really change things in the second half. And, oh, they were so close. And, you know, this was an opportunity to win against a team that, honestly, this was, to me, your best matchup, your best chance versus these, you know, outside of the Jags. I'm looking at the Steelers and the Saints. I think that the Seahawks matched up better against the Steelers than they do the Saints. And so this was the opportunity that I wanted to see them take. And against a Ben Roethlisberger who we all witnessed. We all watched him Sunday night. This is not the Ben Roethlisberger of old. This is not the Ben Roethlisberger that can extend and make plays and can push the ball down the field. This is a guy that's barely making it through. And any idea from Chris Collinsworth that, oh man, the Steelers could catch fire offensively and Ben Roethlisberger, his career as a Steelers not done. Yeah, it is. It should have been over last year. Like, this guy should not be on the field this year. Can still put together some drives, and I don't get the notion from Pete Carroll that he's this unsackable quarterback that's just impossible to get to him at this point. But this is a guy that can only move the ball up and down the field by throwing it short to intermediate. So This is a game that I am disappointed that they weren't able to win, and I have the same sentiment as DK Metcalf here, that it's frustrating when you're a competitor, when you are an elite competitor, and the idea that you had heading into the season with that this was a Super Bowl-level team, that this is a team that is fighting for the division, and now you're at a point where you're 2-4 and your playoff hopes are dimming.
Well, and this is how bad it is.
It's
I can guarantee you that on Pittsburgh radio this morning, what they're talking about isn't, wow, good for them for getting the win. What they're talking about is, I'm sorry, you should have dominated that defense. You were facing a backup quarterback and a running back with your great defense, and they should have shut them down and kept them out of the second half and held them scoreless or held them to a single touchdown. And I can guarantee you that people on sports radio in Pittsburgh are saying, how did this offense, which, like, yeah, isn't the best ever, but how did this offense not have a field day against the Seahawks defense?
Or how did they let their defense let the Seahawks offense come back, more importantly?
Well, right.
And to me, that is the difference in this game. And Mike Tomlin post-game said, hey, we thought these guys were going to come out and throw the ball. Like, that's really what we thought they were going to do, that it, being in that situation, that there would be a little bit of panic. And credit to Pete Carroll, credit to this offense, in terms of sticking with the game plan, in terms of sticking with the original plan, which is to run the football. And you saw why that was so important. When you were able to run the ball effectively, it not only you were able to control the game, but you were able to get Geno Smith in better advantageous situations to throw the football and to use play action, and for that to open up to take the pressure off of Geno Smith. Because as I said heading into this game, the concern that I had was getting into obvious passing situations too often, where Melvin Ingram and TJ Watt and Cam Hayward and that group can pin their ears back and rush the passer. And you saw why. TJ Watt is a superstar, and he had a monster game against the Seattle Seahawks, whether it was tipping the ball, four bat downs at the line of scrimmage, whether it was sacks. I mean, this guy was all over the place. And their ability to run the football and take it to the Steelers for the majority of the second half was critical, was absolutely critical, and expect to see a lot more of that, or an attempt to see a lot more of that by the Seahawks moving forward, because that's the way that they're going to win games.
It was related in the final 30 seconds here, and this is how I want to move the conversation forward. I was on with our sister station this morning, Cairo Radio, with G, Scott, and Ursula, and they were like, what's next? Like, the question was just, what's next for the Seahawks? And the obvious answer about what's next is win. You can afford how many losses, Jake? Maybe one, max two more losses. And that's if the Rams also struggle, so that you can get that wild card.
Honestly, it's a maximum of two.
Max two losses
for the rest of about playoffs.
17-game schedule. That's tough.
Yeah.
That's really, really tough. So when you're looking at this team, the obvious answer of what's next is win. The more interesting answer, or the more interesting question, that is how.
Yeah.
How do you win?
Well,
right?
Pete Carroll's in full belief that now this was a perfect illustration that running the football is priority number one. And that in his philosophy and in his belief, in terms of the core of how a team is, you know, put together and what makes a great team, running the football is a big factor in that. And this is an example of Pete Carroll heading into the second half being frustrated about what the offense did, seeing that the running game worked and manifested itself in a very positive way. It allowed them to score 17 points and nearly win in Pittsburgh. And now you're going to see, I think that was the big takeaway that I had ultimately about, all right, how is this going to affect the team moving forward? And you can expect that this Seahawks offense, at least, is going to be very, very committed to the running game moving forward.
Those comments that Jake was talking about from Pete Carroll, they were on the Mike Salk Show this morning. We're going to get back to that conversation at 12:45, and we'll tell you everything Pete said. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Right now, it's time for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, the Cougs won their third straight game on Saturday, but today is the deadline for the state of Washington to decide on Nick Rolovich's future employment as head coach of Washington State. So What is the real headline?
Real headline. Maybe we'll all be singing a different tune later today, but it sure feels like Saturday was Rolo's last game.
It does. It does feel like it is his last game. I don't think there's any way around it. I mean, they haven't been giving the state. You just look at it. They, you know, Rolo's been seeking a religious exemption. I mean, to my knowledge, there hasn't been very many of those that have been granted. So this just seems like a situation where it's coming to a head and we all know what the result is going to be. And at some point today, we're probably going to hear the news that Nick Rolovich is going to be let go by Washington State. And it's really, I mean, you could take this in a number of different ways, but what a mess. What a mess of a situation. And it's so unfortunate because you look at the program, you look at the results on the football field. Washington State had some good things going for itself. Washington State had momentum building in terms of, you know, winning games and you know, weathering the storm after a very difficult start to the season. You felt like they were onto something here. And so I feel for the players. I feel for – that's really who I feel for right now more than anything else. I know a lot of focus is going to go on Nick Rolovich and the staff, and rightfully so, but I just really feel for the players in this moment who, quite honestly, they've done a lot. They've battled through all of this. They've stuck together. They just, you know, came off of a tremendous victory against Stanford, and they're going to be out with a lot of their leadership, not just Nick Rolovich.
Headline rewrites.
Another 2-4 team in the state. Following their loss to UCLA, Jimmy Lake, head coach of the Huskies, reiterated he has the right staff in place and doesn't feel the need to make a switch quarterback. What's the real headline?
If Washington falls to Arizona, bear down. This cannot be an acceptable answer. Like,
facts.
This cannot be an answer that
facts.
You give next week. If you lose to Arizona, it is inexcusable to say, I'm not making any changes.
As an alum of Arizona, they are the worst football program in the country right now. Like, that's...
They're averaging 14 points per game.
They're 0-6. They haven't won a game since 2019. Like, Jed Fish is a terrible head coach.
Does anyone even remember 2019?
They're down to their third quarterback already because their top two guys have been lost due to injury for the season. There is no hope right now for Arizona, and if Washington somehow cannot pull off that victory on Friday night, like, it is DEFCON. Is it DEFCON 5? The word.
I'll tell you this. I will tell you this: that Jimmy Lake won't even, if that happened, which I do not believe it will happen, because Arizona is that bad. Washington struggling. They are not that bad to lose to Arizona.
Things happen, Jake.
Never
I didn't
say
think
never.
Game of Thrones could ever disappoint me.
Okay, well, if that were to happen, Jimmy Lake isn't even going to get the opportunity to have a press conference to say everything's fine, the staff's fine. He will be fired on the spot.
If they lose to Arizona, you think Jimmy Lake will be fired?
Yes. And if they don't, then I have zero respect for the athletic program at Washington.
And then Donovan becomes interim head coach.
No, Donovan's fired too. Like, you fire both of them immediately.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing has to come crumbling down. That would be absolutely unacceptable. And to me, when you're going through the year, Jimmy Lake, I don't necessarily have an issue with him saying what he's saying right now, because they don't have a good answer. They don't have anybody on staff outside of John Donovan that they feel like, hey, we could turn the play calling duties over to this individual and feel really good about where we're going. And that to me is the... It's part of the struggle, but that's why when it comes to Jimmy Lake, I believe that he has what it takes to be a successful head coach. But from the beginning, I knew that this was going to be the demise of this program with this hiring of offensive coordinator. It was taken for granted. The offensive side of the ball was taken for granted, and they are paying the price for that. They are. I mean, that's just the truth of it. So when you're talking about Washington football, you have to survive through the year. If you're Jimmy Lake, you can't afford embarrassing losses at this point. You got to keep things close. You got to try to finish as strong as possible. But the reality is that 2022 and this offseason, there's some big changes that have to come. And I'm looking particularly on the offensive side of the ball. And Jimmy Lake has to be 100% on board with
that. It's just tough, man. Shout out to Eastern Washington, first in the Big Sky right now. But obviously, your two big collegiate programs, Washington and Wazoo, both with just weird situations or bad situations for some different reasons. And then the Seahawks struggling. It's just like football in Washington.
It stinks.
It's the worst right now. Again, outside of some other schools.
It's been far worse. I looked back at, what, 2008 when...
Oh, let's not talk about
everybody
that.
Everybody was just garbage.
We don't need to talk about it.
Headline rewrite.
Finally, get to a different headline.
2008. You know, it was weird. I was walking down the sidewalk today. I popped in to like a Starbucks to get a coffee, and I'm walking back to my car, and I'm near a high school, and this girl, this is such a dumb thing to say because so many people have had this realization, but I just had it for the first time today. This, you know, young girl walks by me. She's going to high school. She's probably 14 or 15 years old, and it dawned on me in that moment. Like, this person was born when I was in high school, and it's just... I know that there are some people that that moment occurred to them a long time ago, but like there are people in high school that were born in the year that we're talking about right now, 2008. Do you feel old?
Yeah, but not to the level that you do. Like you think about this so much.
I just, you know what it is? It's because I never think about it and then it just occurs to me and all of a sudden I'm just stumped. I'm glad that I interrupted your guys' day with this thought. Like, it's just a train of thought. I just put it out there. The words just
Stacey's
came out of my mouth and I couldn't stop
crisis
it.
Live on the air.
Headline number three, the Kraken fell to the Columbus Blue Jackets 2-1 in overtime on Saturday. The record now sits at 1-1-1 with two games remaining on their road trip. What's the real headline?
Fresh off their first ever goal, then their first ever win, then their first ever fight. Comes the first ever disappointing loss for the Kraken.
Yeah.
You knew you had to get there eventually.
Yeah, that one was a gut punch on Saturday.
Yeah, it definitely.
Because the Vegas was not a disappointing loss.
No, it definitely was not. It was not a disappointing loss whatsoever. So, yeah, this one hurts a little bit when you're the Kraken, but it's still obviously very, very early on in the season. You're going to go through things like this, and it's really about how you learn and how you grow from it. That, to me, is the story of this team and how can they learn and how can they grow together quickly on the fly as they're, you know, learning to play together and then eventually solidify themselves as the season progresses and as you get closer to the playoffs. And do you give yourself a chance to continue to make that run into the playoffs, becoming, you know, solidifying that identity? That is going to be the challenge for Dave Hakstol and the rest of this coaching staff and the rest of the players, Mark Giordano and the leadership of this team as it's emerging and as they're trying to find who they are, that ultimately is the biggest challenge that the Seattle Kraken face as they're going through this process. And you know what happens with each game to start this year? This first five game road trip is that you get closer and closer to your first home
That's
opener.
Exactly right.
That is what I'm waiting for.
Saturday.
That it's going to be
what
a I'm party.
I can't wait.
All right. Don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show if you miss it. Subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. Did Trey Brown throw his name into the competition at starting corner? We're going to ask Dave Wyman that and what he saw from the Hawks defense next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Joining us now is Dave Wyman, one half of Wyman and Bob in the Afternoons, right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Hey, Wyman.
Hey, what's happening there, Ross? How are you?
Good. We were just talking about kind of our mixed feelings coming out of this one, how you felt really happy for Alex Collins and Trey Brown, and then you felt kind of proud of a team that fought back and rallied, but then you just felt so disappointed for where they are as a whole. It's a mixed bag of emotions right now, Dave.
Yeah, I have to say, though, I'm pleasantly surprised, and it basically – you know, it has to do with your expectations. So, you know, my expectations were not very high for this game. I mean, I thought they were going to get killed. I really did. And, you know, just the way they've been playing defensively, and I wasn't quite sure it was going to work out. But a couple of really good performances, man. Alex Collins, my gosh. You know, that one drive, I thought the tight ends were on the next drive, two scoring drives there. So, yeah, I expected it to be like a blowout, and it really, you know, I thought the corners played really well. So, yeah, I feel like it was a positive step forward, even though they lost.
Now, Dave, in what ways was it a positive step forward? Are you talking more specifically offensively, defensively? What area were you encouraged?
Well, I just, as far as getting the running game going and Geno's ability to operate the offense, I feel like that they can win some games, you know? Like, they can beat New Orleans. They can beat Jacksonville. Because, listen, I mean, until you see him get going, and then until you see the defense stop anybody, you know, they're going to get scored on by New Orleans and Jacksonville. And I know people think that sounds crazy, but when you're playing the defense the way they were in the Ram game and, you know, that string of games, I thought they righted the ship there. And so, you know, you see Jamal Adams is getting used better. And, you know, you see him, he's more involved, blitzing more up around the line of scrimmage. And then they just, you know, look, they put some yards up and Big Ben, you know, but still, I feel like they tightened their defense up. So I feel like during this stretch without Russell Wilson, I feel like they can win some games now. Whereas after the Ram game, I was thinking that they can't beat anybody.
What'd you make of Trey Brown?
He's good. I loved it, man. You know, I thought DJ Reed had a really good, I mean, he had a couple passes completed on him, but I thought he looked really good. And then Trey Brown is just a baller. I mean, that guy, you know, you look at his history in college, I mean, he steps up in big moments. You know, they're talking about putting a statue of him outside of AT&T Stadium because in the Big 12 championship game for 3 years in a row, he made like game-winning, game-saving plays. So, yeah, it wasn't too big for him. And, you know, you saw him run the route of Claypool a couple of times and, you know, caused some incomplete passes. And, yeah, he looked really good. And I'm really happy for him because this guy, remember, he's the third highest drafted corner in the Pete Carroll era.
Yeah, it is a pretty crazy stat when you say that, Dave. And obviously they had high hopes and aspirations. From the beginning, they said that Trey Brown was somebody that they believed had starter potential and that they were going to give him that opportunity. Unfortunately, you know, when he got hurt in the middle of training camp, you never really got a chance to see that manifest itself. But, you know, Dave, for everybody out there that's wanting to look at Trey Brown and really get a full evaluation of him, how long will it take, do you believe, till we can get a true snapshot of who he is and what he can ultimately be?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question, Jake. I think for a rookie, it takes pretty much the whole season. I mean, you know, unless he just starts, you know, making all kinds of plays. I think it was Richard Sherman's first or second start. And I think he went in because Walter Thurman got hurt. And I don't mean to compare him to, you know, Richard Sherman. I mean, that's pretty lofty. But still, you know, he got a pick. I think his first game that he started, it was against Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. He got an interception, and he was just off and running. I mean, if he starts doing that kind of thing. But right now I'm just liking seeing him, you know, have the confidence out there to cover. And, you know, and so he's done it here in this game. And, you know, it's his first game. Sometimes you know, think about it in the next week and you struggle a little bit. So I just think, you know, maybe, I don't know, for Trey, if he continues to do this for 3-4 games in a row and he has, what you want to see is him have some plays where it builds his confidence. You know, even if it's only like one or two plays where, you know, he comes out of nowhere and tips a ball or makes a nice tackle or whatever, you know, maybe it can happen, you know, a little bit faster, but yeah, so far I don't want to, you know, I don't want to set too many expectations, but you know, he looks really good so far. But just, you know, I think to answer the question, just takes a little bit longer for a rookie.
Hope. He gives us hope, Dave.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, Wyman, what's happening with screens? Like, what's been the deal here?
With what?
With screenplays, it feels like it's not really working out regularly for the Seahawks, and I'm personally kind of surprised. Yeah. I think I expected a little more success, not only more success with those under Waldron, but that he would even use them more.
Yeah, you know, it's such a timing thing. Mm. And, you know, you have to have the right guys and you just have to work on it. You know, I've always said, look, some people will say that they're just not a good screen team. I'm like, well, why not? You know, I mean, you should be able to work on that. And, you know, and then on the other side of the ball, too, sometimes you have defenses that don't read it very well. But, yeah, the screenplay is, it can get blown up so easily.
You know, that's the thing about it. If you recognize it, it can, you know, you can blow the whole thing up if there's just one guy, you know, that either doesn't do it right on the offensive side or a guy on the defensive side that sniffs it out. So, yeah, I that's kind of disappointing to me because I'm always thinking that why aren't you a good screen team? You know, you should work on it, you know, and maybe they just – maybe they have, and it just is not something that they're confident in right now.
Dave, you know, one of the things that you walk away from is obviously the second half performance offensively for this group and the way that they were able to run the football and the way they were able to be physical. The offensive line really started to take over the game. You know, obviously Pete Carroll, that's been a big belief of his entire career, part of his philosophy. What are you anticipating seeing, you know, heading into the Saints game, now seeing the results of that in the second half?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jake. You cut out, and the first part of my phone cut out. Well,
no problem.
Really quick.
Yeah, so the second half of the game for offensively for the Seahawks, they started running the football a lot better. They controlled the game. Because of that and because of what we know Pete's philosophy has always been, what do you expect to see heading into the Saints game?
Well, I mean, I'm hoping that they could continue to run the ball. You know, and you know, off of that, get the play action pass going. And, you know, and if you listen to Brandon Staley, you know, I don't know if you guys heard that whole clip where he's talking about the run game and what it causes. It's pretty cool. It's kind of long, and you can tell he's a little bit of a nerd, but the head coach of the Chargers, I really like what he says about the running game. It forces defenses to not only play blocks, which is somewhat of a lost art, but it also, you know, makes you tackle. So, and it just brings up the physical nature of what you're doing. You saw it happen last night. So, you know, to me, I would like to see them continue to run the ball. And then, you know, on defense, just get more physical, you know, more physical. It's interesting watching their defense, how on some plays, really physical, other plays, they kind of take a play off here and there, but, you know, on defense, the thing is takeaways, and they don't have a lot of those. So, I mean, that's something that would really help turn this team defensively around.
Yeah, we'll see if they can get a couple this upcoming Monday, three primetime games in a row.
Maybe Trey Brown, huh?
Yeah, well, that would be great. What a game for him. He comes in his first start, maybe, or second time in a game and gets a pick.
Yeah.
He is Dave Wyman. You can hear him later today on Wyman and Bob, and every weekday on Wyman and Bob. They start at 2 p.m. Thanks, Wyman.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Whether you're glass half full or glass half empty Seahawks fan, we've got something for both of you. Don't go anywhere. It's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey
We're all
Ross.
Learning a lot about each other right now. I have to say, that was a fascinating break, a little intermission there. Curtis, I learned that your love of trivia came from crushing other kids in Sunday school.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm imagining like them not even. So Curtis told us he used to. So Curtis, as you guys know, is amazing at trivia.
A trivia genius.
It's insane. And
it wasn't limited to just sports as a kid.
No, that's exactly right. Because you said that it started with Sunday school. They would have you guys guess the verse and you would just dominate.
Yeah.
And then you did the Kirk Cousins.
You like that? Yeah.
I'm imagining like a 7-year old Curtis Rogers. They're scared.
Geez.
I just wanted to win an eraser.
Yeah.
Why
that's
are you so
mean? That's pretty much what it was.
You're collecting all the toys. That's really cruel. And then Jake, I learned that you were a Sunday school teacher. I didn't know this.
Yes. Yeah.
But you won't let me come teach Sunday school.
I mean, you're more than welcome to come, but I don't know.
I think there's like a vetting process.
I trust you with the lesson.
Yeah. I think I would excel.
The real reason is because I in Sunday school I teach, you know, at 16 to 18 year olds, and then Stacey would just be sitting there trying to act like she's of
just
their
the
age.
That's right.
That's
yeah.
right.
Like,
she knows.
Hey, fellow
all...
kids.
Like, no, yeah, I just watched that TikTok too.
Yeah. No, I definitely have a TikTok account. Let's talk about it. All right. Well, that was fun. The Seahawks, well, more than just defense. I'm actually switching it. We're looking at offense and defense, but we talked about a positive and negative from the team. And you wanted to look at defense for yours.
Yeah.
And I looked at the kind of the offensive side, but I have some defense stuff. But we'll start with your defensive things.
Okay. Should I give the good news first or the bad news
first? Okay, so what we're doing is we're coming up with a positive for you glass half full people.
Yes.
To look at something good to take from this game that this team can build on, and then we'll talk about how they can build on
right.
it. And then we've got a negative that they're going to need to change.
Okay. Why don't I give the negative first? Because it's always better to give the good news afterwards, I believe.
That's a good way to do it.
The negative to me is still the pass rush continues to be a glaring weakness. I mean, you look at this group and they are not. Look, Pete Carroll can say all he wants. Ben Roethlisberger, 18 years. He's impossible. He's the most impossible quarterback to sack. Sorry, I don't buy that at all. And when you're the Seahawks, the one sack that you got was a quote-unquote team sack. Not one individual was credited with the sack, and it was the Ben Roethlisberger fumble.
Okay, I was so confused. I saw the one sack
of the game.
And I was combing through the stats and combing through the play-by-play, and I was like, who got this sack? I don't remember this sack at all.
Yeah, Big Ben sacked himself is really what it was. So your pass rush continues to be non-existent, and you got Jamal Adams more involved in the pass rush. You got him more involved in the line, around the line of scrimmage, which was great. I believe it really was the right thing to do. I was talking about that before the game on Sunday. It was an area that allowed Jamal Adams to have more of an impact on the game. He did a lot of really good things, but when you also are sending him in for pressures constantly and all you're doing is having him line up on the end of the line of scrimmage and declare to the world that he is coming, now what you're doing is you're giving Ben Roethlisberger and every quarterback the opportunity to turn protection to him, and now Jamal Adams is going up against tackles. Jamal Adams can dominate tight ends and running backs. He's not going to win too many one-on-one straight-up battles against offensive tackles in this league. And so there needs to be a level of deception there when it comes to Jamal Adams to get him into the best possible situation to truly get to the quarterback.
How do you do that?
You do it by disguising your coverages. You do it by disguising where he's going to be. You do it by, hey, I'm going to line up on the end of the line of scrimmage, and we're going to run a stunt here or a twist where I'm going to switch gap responsibilities with the defensive end or the defensive end and the defensive tackle, and I'm going to knife back inside into the interior, into the A-B gap. There's lots of different ways that you could do it. You can put multiple guys on the line of scrimmage, and now they have to guess where it's coming from, to the right of Jamal Adams, or is Marquise Blair coming off the edge? Like, there's a lot of ways to create deception there that we're just not seeing quite yet, but hopefully they will get to that point. Now, to my positive, Trey Brown. Trey Brown stepping in this game as a rookie coming off of IR, I don't think people understand how incredibly difficult that is to be assignment sound, to come in and play the way that he did was very, very impressive against two good receivers in Chase Claypool and Deontay Johnson, who I both really, really like. He did a really good job, and to me, he should be the starter moving forward opposite of DJ Reed and give him that opportunity. Allow him to be the guy until he proves to you that he can't be that guy. That's always been the way Pete Carroll has operated when it comes to competition and it comes to giving guys chances. He did that with Sidney Jones. I think Sidney Jones played himself out of that role. Trey Brown gets the next crack at it, and he absolutely earned it with his physical play, with his instinctual play, and also with his coverage skills downfield. I thought he did a great job.
You think he starts next week?
Yes, 100%.
Trey Brown starts.
Yes, he starts. I don't see any reason not to.
It's both
zero
fascinating.
Reason not to start him.
I don't want to say good news. It's a fascinating turn because I would not have predicted he'd be starting a game this year. Not because he didn't look fine in camp. Again, he was injured pretty early in the preseason, went on IR on the 7th. But it is a fascinating place where we've ended up talking about this cornerback group.
It's honestly, it's a disaster. That's why we're looking at this and we're even in this position right now. But Trey Brown, hey, you showed promise, you showed life. You get the next crack at it. And we'll see if he's able to maintain that, if he's able to hold that. But you have to give him that chance and give him that opportunity.
Can I get back to your negative? Because that pass rush, someone texted in and I agree with them there. They said, where's Carlos Dunlap been?
Nowhere.
Now,
he's been nowhere. Neither LJ Collier. Neither Benson Mayoa. Where is Kerry Hyder Jr., who had 10.5 sacks a year ago? They have been non-existent. Rasheem Green, who everybody was saying, oh, he's emerged after week one. They have been non-existent when it comes to rushing the passer. The only one that has showed anything, any sort of life, has been Daryl Taylor.
And I'll say
that's
that.
That's it.
So that's what I was going to say is, now, before I realized the severity of what was happening, right? Because once you realize that, and once you realize that they're examining Daryl Taylor for a neck injury and they're bringing out the cart, you don't care about anything. You're just hoping that he's okay.
Without question.
The second that he went down, though, in those first, like, 3 seconds, when I was like, oh, is it a knee injury? Did he, you know what I mean? Like, did he hurt his arm? I couldn't tell. I was like, I can't believe that I'm here in week six thinking, oh my God, if you lose Daryl Taylor, what happens to your pass rush? That is not where I predicted I would be. I thought that we would be lucky to see contributions from Daryl Taylor this year, not him leading your team in sacks.
Yeah, it's both a really nice surprise and also a very stark reality. The nice surprise is that Daryl Taylor isn't just somebody that's getting one sack and he's getting some nice pressures and, you know, you're getting that nice contribution. It's the fact that this guy's balling. He's doing extremely well and he's really taken off in his role. That is a great surprise. The stark reality is that you're getting zero contribution from everybody else when it comes to the pass rush. And that was something that none of us really anticipated. But at the same time, I talked about in the offseason, my one concern is that when you look at this group and what you got out of them last year, sometimes you have to get in, get out. Knowing that you capitalized on one hot moment or one last hurrah for guys that are aging into their 30s, like Carlos Dunlap, who I wanted back, by the way, but guys like Benson Mayo, guys like Kerry Hyder Jr., who never in his career has been a consistent pass rusher. You're bringing those guys in, relying on them to be the front line of your pass rush. That is a very much hit or miss situation, and unfortunately, you're looking at a miss right now.
All right, we're going to get to four down territory. I've got some good questions for you, and I might throw in an extra from the text line about the pass rush. I just think it's a great question. Again, that's coming up at 11:13. Before we get to it, the good, the bad, the ugly from yesterday. It's plays of the game. Don't go anywhere.